Then Montessori Maya then gives some indication of who is the Ishvara. So let's chant those.
Ane jarika manaso javiyo naidan deva apnuvam purvam arsat tadhavato nya etiteti tistat tasmin apo matarish vadadati tare jati tanai jati tadure tadhyantike tarantarasya sarvasya taru sarvashashya vayataha.
That's kind of like a riddle for these very intelligent people. Chanika Pandit says, it's very rare to find a poor man who is completely honest and a beautiful young girl who is completely chaste, right? So it's very, very rare to find a jnani who is not proud of his knowledge. He may act humble and stuff, but if you start like pressuring him and you see, you know, just, well, I know, you don't know, I know more than you know. Yeah. So this is very natural. So these are written for highly intellectual people. So now it's saying, well, you understand the material world is false. You understand that all these forms are illusion, like that. But the Ishvara, the controlling principle, the controller behind everything, he walks, but he does not walk. Right? He stays in one place, but he's everywhere. Right? He has no hands, but he controls everything, like that. Oh, so it's like riddles, you know? Those who speak do not know. Those who know do not speak.
Oh, so.
Then why are you talking? Ah, oh, very good. Yeah. God is a circle with its center everywhere and no circumference. Some of these very, some of these bogus, some of these very intellectual riddles. So the Upanishads are like that. It's just like they're saying that the Ishvara, he's one place, but he's everywhere. He has no leg, no feet, but he runs faster than everybody. He has no hands, but he's controlling everything. So Prabhupada says in the purport, this is to accustom people to the idea that the Ishvara is a person, has a form, but it's not like our form. Not like our form. In 6 and 7.
Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani evanupashyati tasarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatmana vijagukshate yasmin sarvani bhutani atma eva bhuvijanataha tatra ko moha karshoka ekatvam anupashyata.
Now he's saying, you see the first two lines are the same? 6 and 7 are the same. Actually, the first two lines are the same, and the second two lines are almost the same. Yeah, very similar. Sarvabhutani, all living entities, that the person who actually sees the Ishvara properly, he can see that all living entities are his parts and parcels. And then so why should he be afraid of anybody? Right? Everybody's like representative of Krishna, who's all good, I'm taking my quota, so I shouldn't be afraid of the tiger. Right? I'm walking in the jungle, there's a tiger. One devotee, Krita Karma, he's from Cuba. And he was there just when Fidel Castro was defeating Batista and a big war going on, civil war. And to keep, and the students were supporting the revolution, you know. So to try and diminish the enthusiasm of the students, Batista was feeding the leaders of the students to the lions in the zoo at night. And so he was starving the lions, they were hungry and they would kill these students. And so, you know, if you want to join this revolution, maybe fed to the lion like that. And Krita Karma said his house was like, I guess maybe like about 20 blocks away, maybe, you know, a few kilometers or something from the zoo, you know, 1-4 kilometers. But it said still at nighttime you could hear these lions roaring, and they were so hungry like that. It was scary, it was frightening. It was like, a good lion. But they were ferocious, and it was just, wow. You know, children were terrified like that, you know? So powerful. You know? But if you're taking your quota, then you understand, no, this lion is also part and parcel of Krishna. So he won't take me as his quota, most likely. You know? Prabhupada says in the forest, the different sages, brahmanas, they live in the forest, gurus, And they had their Gurukula with their students. So there's a tigress, Tigresa. She's living in the forest there too. And so he gives her milk. She comes and drinks milk like that. Then he has all his little brahmacharis line up, right? This big up like that. He said, he brings the tigress in, he has her smell them. He says, okay, these are my men. I give you milk, so you don't bother them like that. So she agrees. So putting her with this tiger looking in the face like that, you know. Guruji, it's okay, don't worry. You know, yes, sir. You know. Because and Prabhupada says in these two purports that in number six he says, only Uttamadhikari can see how everybody is part and parcel of Krishna. In number seven he says, Majjhimadhikari can also see if he, you know, keeps his intelligence, looks at things intellectually, he can get a feeling too and act properly like that in terms of his intelligence. By using his intelligence he can also maintain his perspective. The Uttamadhikari, he can actually see this. He look at anybody and begins to know them, and you see, oh, this person could do this for Krishna. Oh, she could do that for Krishna. Oh, she could do that for Krishna. So he says, everybody has this potential to be a lover of Krishna, a servant of Krishna, a friend of Krishna. So therefore he sees everybody as part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore he doesn't fear anybody, doesn't have any envy of anybody, like that. You know?
Sometimes in India I put some sugar outside, so yeah. The ants don't come in, so yeah. They have their quota and they don't come and take what's mine.
This is the ants, he was giving sugar to the ants to stay outside.
Yeah, just to stay outside. So
I was waiting for a bus one time by the side of the road in India, and there was this drop of mucus, you know, somebody spit there. And all these flies were gathered around, pushing each other like that to get some. They're like this far away, there was some sugar water from some sweet. And all these ants were gathered around, pushing like that.
Yeah.
You know? But it was so amazing. Like, you know, they didn't want each other's, you know, nutrition like that. It was like, wow, you know, attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you understand and understand properly, you understand how everybody has their quota and everything goes going quite nicely.
Yeah.
At least at the level of no karma. Mantra 8. Saparyagach chukram akkayam avranam Ashnaviram Shudam Apapaviram Kavir Manisi Paribi Swayambur Yatat Tatyat Tortan Viradach Chasha Vajavi Samavya. So no one can figure out why there's extra words hanging on there. Somebody will understand like that. Because these weren't composed by idiots or something. These were composed by extremely intellectual people, very clever people. Actually, somebody asked who spoke this Upanishad. Do you know? That's one. So, which Veda is it from? It's from the Yajurveda. Yeah. So I was talking to Radhika about that, our scholar, and he says, yeah, every Veda is the Samhita, and there's the Brahmana, which describes the rituals. There's the Aranyaka, which I guess gives something maybe more confidential. And finally, the Upanishads, which are the prayers, confidential knowledge that goes with it like that. So the Yajurveda Upanishads, I was looking on the Google search or Wikipedia, there's a page for Isopanishad, and it gives a little history, and it gives a link, which takes you to a translation of the Yajurveda done about 1914 or something like that. You know? And it's incredible. It's archaic language, and the translations are odd. You know? But I think Prabhupada would look at it and say, all right, you know, 100 years ago, it was doing pretty good. And it's there. And it's like 40 Upanishads for the connected to the Yajurveda. And the very last one is the Isa Upanishad. But of course the scholars say it was added later. But why is that? Because it talks about monotheism. Okay. Well, why? So anything that's monotheistic was added later because it was monotheistic. It's like that. That's their logic. It's automatically monotheism came later, before that there was no belief in one God. But anyway, other people accept it as part of the original Veda, like that. Yeah. And then Madhvacharya did commentaries on 10 Upanishads, and one of them was the Isopanishad. And he says, it appears or it is a fact, that it was spoken by Swayambhuva Manu, like that. And to support that, he quotes from the Bhagavatam, where it is, 8.1 or something like that. There's one prayer by Swayambhuva Manu, and it's an identical mantra. And later on, another one like that. So that's one Madhvacharya suggestion. It's spoken by Swayambhuva Manu. Other things too. It talks about quota. and things like that. You know? Okay, 9, 10, 11. Andam. You got it. Come here. Here's your seat. Yeah.
Andam tama pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato ye vate tamo yasu vidyaya vrataha anyare bahur vidyaya nyanyara bahur avidyaya iti shosham adhiranam yenasta vichachakshare vidyam cha vidyam chayas tadveyo bhayam saha Avidyaya mritam tirtva, vidyaya mritam asmite.
So it's talking about vidya and avidya. So what is vidya? What is vidya?
Knowledge.
What is avidya?
Ignorance.
Yeah, ignorance. Now we have one more thing here, which is even worse. I guess it's ahura vidya. Cultivated stupidity. Right? Somebody is, he knows a property. Human beings should eat, you know, eat fruits, vegetables, that kind of thing. Somebody in ignorance, he's eating meat, eggs, like that. Catches a bird, you know, flips it open with his teeth, like that. You know, or something like that. He does something simply like that. But then the Vedavata Ratas, people who have so-called knowledge, they then encourage people that eating meat is good for you. You know, it's for all these healthy reasons like that. And here's how to cook it, here's how to store it, here's how to do all these things, like with meat, you know. So not just like, you know, killing animals with rocks or something, now they're organizing, you know, big factory production of meat, eggs, cutting the beaks off of chickens so they don't fight, you know, this unbelievable production of meat. And then what happens, they go to hell, right? Even worse than people who are just like in ignorance. So it's talking about three things here, knowledge, ignorance, and cultivated ignorance. Right? And Prabhupada says the modern civilization is mostly on this level. They're cultivating stupidity. Like that. Yeah. They say that you have to get knowledge to satisfy, you know, the hungry belly. Right? But he says the more they get knowledge about how to satisfy the hungry belly problem is increasing more and more. There was an encuesta. See in Spanish, for me, encuesta. There was a survey from the United Nations. And they had to cancel it. You know, the survey was, what is your opinion about the food shortage? And they had to cancel it after they started distributing it because the Cubans didn't know what an opinion was. Right? The Americans didn't know what a shortage was. And the Africans didn't know what food was. So this is a fact. You know, we're kind of very fortunate, but most people in the world are struggling, you know, to food and things like that. So because they're cultivating this stupidity, right? So the more they try to, you know, take more than their quota, the less they get, actually like that. Now here's something really interesting. What's the first line of mantra 9? Andam tama pravishanti. What's the first line of mantra 12? Andam tama pravishanti. Okay, what's the second line of mantra 9? Ye vidyanupasate. And mantra 12, ye sambhutam upasate, tato bhuya evate tamo, tato bhuya evate tamo, yatu vidyayam rataha, yau sambhutam rataha. So 9, 10, 11 are identical with 12, 13, 14. Yeah. But Radhika never noticed this. This is the biggest problem. I never noticed it. Wow, it's incredible. Yeah. But 9, 10, 11 talk about vidya, right? Avidya. 12, 13, and 14 talk about sambhuta, asambhuta, sambhava, asambhava. So I was asking about this. He said, yeah, the root is the same root. It's bhu, which means existence, reality, to create, to grow. Yeah. So you can chant this, chant 12, 13, 14. Andam prama, andam tama pradishanti. Ye sambhuti upasate, tato uyevate tamo, yastu sambhuja rataha, anyere uhor sambhava, anyarahur asambhava, iti shushu madiranam, inasta vicha chakshare, sambhutim chavanasim cha, yastar vedo vahamsaha, inashena mrityam tirtva,
Sambhujamritamasmite.
So, one result comes from worshipping the cause of all causes. Another result comes from worshipping that which is not cause, has the demigods, Baba says. So it doesn't say demigods, it says asambhutim. So again, Radhika is looking at his dictionary, and sambhuti means possessing specific opulences, like that. Different definitions like that. So the third definition was those who possess specific opulences. So the asambhutim are those who possess no specific opulences. So the demigods, this time in Mayapur, Umapati Swami gave a very nice example. And if you go to the library and check a book out, it's not your book. You can't write in it, you can't give it away, you can't do these things like that. So all the knowledge we have is not our knowledge. We just have it on loan, you know. And we start to misuse it, right away it goes away. That disappears, you know. So then yes, Prabhupada to translate asambhuti, because it's worship, upasate. To worship those who have no specific opulences then refers to the devatas. Because it's not their opulences like that.
Cultivated knowledge and ignorance, is that ours?
No.
Cultivated knowledge and ignorance?
Yeah.
Is that ours?
Is that what?
Ours?
Ours.
Even knowledge is not
maybe
ours.
That might be ours. No.
Might be ours?
Not really, because ultimately the soul is Satchit Ananda. Yeah. So we have our own consciousness like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's also a temporary covering. Yeah. Stupidity is also like gold. You know, gold you can wash it off and it becomes gold again. Yeah. You know, maybe get covered with dirt like that. So even the cultivated ignorance is not really our nature.
No, because it's not part of us. So
no. Even material knowledge is not our nature.
Yeah.
Our nature is consciousness. Yeah. When we become conscious of matter, that's called knowledge. You know, conscious of facts, ideas, these kind of things. Yeah. And fix our consciousness on them. That's called knowledge in the material world. But there's no knowledge in the spiritual world. There's just consciousness. This is the kind of things these are written for very intellectual, mental type people like that. Yeah. So here then, you see the author is playing with the reader because he's going back and forth. Vidya, sambhutim, asambhutim, avidya. It's like you could hold the two in your mind and see how they work. And then bhava and bhava and bhuta. So very subtle changes like that. Yeah. So kind of like it's telling anybody who's reading this, look, I'm more intelligent than you are and I believe in God. You know? And I'm going to show you by these little games like that. You see many times Prabhupada talking to professors, he's playing with them like that. He has to ask them a question, he's chanting like that. What about this then? You know? And they go, you know, they like these mental games. Yeah. It's like somebody else who's very physical likes to chant and dance, you know? You know, the Hare Krishna temple, he comes, intentionally comes, you know, too late for the lecture, but smokes marijuana and brings his friend, goes to the temple and chanting and dancing. And so they realize, yeah, this is the best music, you know, best singing like that. And after that, big feast, wow. You know, so he's attracted like that. So the intellectual people, they're attracted to these mental games and stuff like that. There's a conference sometimes, on the East Coast in the United States, some big university, I don't know. It's called the Nobel Conference on Aesthetics. What is aesthetics? Aesthetics.
Beauty.
Okay, yeah. Now what is beauty? What is that kind of thing? So they invite different Nobel laureates from science, to come and talk about aesthetics. Because usually you think science doesn't deal with this, yeah. But it's amazing how they get so enthusiastic talking about the beauty and symmetry and these things in science. You know Heisenberg? One time, what's his name? Richard Feynman. He's a Nobel laureate. He went to one science conference and he sat down in the auditorium. There's a lady next to him. He said, "Oh, hello, I'm Dr. Richard Feynman." He says, "Oh, I heard about you." He said, "Who are you?" "So I'm Professor Heisenberg's widow." And he said, "Are you certain?" You get the joke? Because he invented the uncertainty principle. Like that. You know, this is a joke, the kind of jokes that scientists tell other scientists. The uncertainty principle. "Are you certain?" So I guess you laugh. So, like that, they have, and he was talking, Heisenberg was saying, that whenever there's two ways to explain the same thing, I always choose that way which is more beautiful, like that. And then one Chinese Nobel laureate, he was talking about the almost inconceivable pleasures of the mind. This guy is going, putting these things together in different ways like that. You know. Again, I mentioned our friend in California, Jai Krishnadas. He's an international chess master, and he can keep 7 games of chess in his mind at one time. Like 7 boards. Probably defeat any of us like that. He lines up 7 people. It's like $1 a piece. Every piece you get more by 10 cents, 25 cents. So every piece you capture the person, you got to pay you 25 cents like that. So 7 people lined up, and it's like a limit of like time limit. So he has to go from one board to the other like that. Whereas they get 7 times as long to think. And he doesn't even look at the board. He just keeps it in his mind like that. You know. So you think, okay, we've got a chance against this guy. Every single one. But in terms of sound, he has almost no ability to focus on sound. The Maha Mantra is like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. So he has extremely highly developed visual intelligence. So I showed him this yantra, this Nishina yantra. It has 108 lines. And he started like composing it one line for each mantra. But he would do it in different patterns and in different colors and stuff like that, you know, chanting like that. Somebody has a different kind of intelligence. Yeah. So this is Light of the Bhagavad is for preaching for cultured people, aesthetically inclined people. This is for preaching for very intellectual people. Yeah. And the more I'm going through this, the more I feel comfortable in terms of using it, understanding the content. It doesn't say God, actually, Prabhupada translates Om as the Supreme Lord, I think. Om, the Supreme Lord. You know, so if you go through this, the word God, Bhagavan, Hari, doesn't appear one time in this whole thing. You know? But practically speaking, every single translation probably has Lord like that. You know? So you've got to be able to justify that. Okay, Sambhuti, Upasate, that means worship. Yeah. But worship of the what? Worship of those who possess no specific opulences. Worship of that which possesses specific opulences. You know? I was going through my Microsoft Word program there, typing something, right? And I wrote down, the cow, he is here, right? Then the automatic word checker, grammar checker said, no, the cow, it is here. It's very interesting, huh? Because the cow is not a person. Very interesting. The machine has intelligence like that. So we're talking about this. Is the Sambhutim a person or not? Well, you worship him, you get this. You don't worship him, you gotta get that. By different results of worshiping those who have no opulences and those who have opulences. So it's distinguishing the Sambhuti from the Asambhuti. Like that. Okay.
Under the cow, in English, cow isn't.
No, according to the word processor, it has automatic spelling check and grammar check. So the automatic grammar check said that I had cow, you know, as he. The cow, he was doing this. It said, no, the cow, it was doing this. Yeah, yeah. So it tried to assign the cow as being a thing rather than a person. Amazing, isn't it?
In other languages, huh? In other languages, it's not like in European, like French or something.
Yeah.
But also in English,
it
would be like this.
No, it
would
be it.
No, it depends how you look at it.
And the bull is also it.
Yeah, because it's a thing.
It's not him.
No, it's not the language. It's not the language. It's the meaning, the understanding, like that. But it's interesting. So here's the same thing. It's talking about the he, which possesses specific opulences. It, but is it it which possesses specific opulences? How do you think of a controller as being impersonal? The controlling principle in the universe, okay, or the controller of the universe. That's just very specific for a certain kind of people, and some people may never have to use this ever. But other times you meet people like that, very intellectual people, and if you have some familiarity with the Upanishad, it's very powerful. Professor Bharati, I remember I heard this tape. Abhidhananda Maharaj, when he was a brahmachari, was invited to this, you know, some symposium on Vedic culture, this and that, by some university. So he went there and he was talking a little bit about, you know, the Vedas, sort of think of first Professor Bharati talked first, you know, about Vedas and knowledge. He's a big Maya, famous Mayavadi. And Bharati is like a big high class name, you know. So he was talking like that. And then Hridayananda Maharaj started talking about, you know, our books and stuff like that. Professor Bharati is, you know, looking at him and making sarcastic noises and his pronunciation. You know, but then he quoted the Katha Upanishad 2.2.13, right? And Professor Bharati said, "Why did you quote that? Why did you quote that? Why did you quote that?" It was like, my spiritual master has in his book. Why did you quote that? It's just like he just, you know, completely lost his mind, you know. Because it's so powerful, it's so clear. It's just even, you know, even an idiot in Sanskrit grammar can figure out what it means like that. Nityo, what does nitya mean? What does nitya mean? Que significa nitya? Nitya Ananda. No?
Always.
Eternal. Eternal. It's such a common word. You know, it's very nityo nitya nams. Amongst all the eternals, the nityo nitya nams, chetanas, chetananam. What does cheta mean?
Consciousness.
Yeah, right. It's so simple, you know. Amongst all the eternals, amongst all the conscious beings, eko, bahunam. Amongst the many, bahunam, yo, he, vidadati, vidati patagrinati, kamam. He's supplying everybody else's desire. It's so fundamental. And so, out of all the eternal beings, there's one, and out of all conscious beings, there's one who is maintaining everybody else and supplying their desires, like that. So then I saw one time, like, Max Müller's translations of the Upanishad, like that. Okay, so, oh yeah, Katha Upanishad. And it's divided in two sections, and the second section is divided in two parts also. And the second section, the 13th verse, 2.2.13, is the, you know, the Katha Upanishad, this verse. And his translation was completely incomprehensible. Out of all the eternals forever conscious of their eternality, you know, desire is eternally, you know, manifest. So it's like weird, because it had no meaning, you know. And the thing is, it's almost for certain, absolutely certain, that it was an intentional mistranslation. Because he, you know, is not such an idiot that he could misunderstand the Sanskrit that much. Right in his own preface, he says, even in the last 10 years, we've improved our Sanskrit a lot. And so our original translations are improving, but it's not that stupid. Yeah. It's almost for sure, you know, like a definite mistranslation. So this verse is double trouble for the mind bodies. Yeah. 2.2.13. And if you look in Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, 13th text, you won't find it. But if you look in the 12th text, you'll find it. Yeah. So it's like 2.13 Bhagavad Gita. No, it's not in the purport, it's in 2.12 in the purport. Like maybe it went after like that. So it's one of the, I think every Bhakti Shastri course, you should know this verse also. It's so powerful. After that, Professor Bharati, for the entire rest of the conference, it was like frightening. It was like he was a monkey or something, really. It was like he was going to jump off a table and do something obscene or something. Maharaj was, Hiranyamaraj Brahmacharya was feeling happy. It was like frightening. The guy, what's the guy going to do next? Like that. I won't quote any more mantras from Prabhupada. Yeah. So it's nice to know these, to be able to use these, you know. And so the first two verses are very nice. These are very nice for classes on economics. Many times they're given classes on economics, quoting these two verses. And big professors are quite amazed. Oh, you think everything is complete. Amazing. Wow, he said almost all economic theory is based upon the idea there's a shortage. There's not enough. And therefore, economic theory means how to adjust a class conflict, like that and stuff. You know the Republic? Who wrote the Republic?
Who wrote the Republic?
The Republic. Why? Plato. Yeah, I suppose it's a dialogue of Socrates. So it's going on, and then somebody says, Socrates, you're talking about good men, bad men, government. What is your idea of the ideal city? Like that. So Socrates starts describing his idea. And he's describing a vegetarian society. You know? And then his friend says, oh, Socrates, this is not practical to think that all people would become vegetarians. What if you populated your city with meat eaters, with pigs? think he even says pig like that. Then Socrates says, oh, then to maintain the animals and get proper nutrition, you'd require so much more land, so much more water like that. And therefore there would be fighting between people for their land and their water. And because people would be accustomed to killing animals, then they would not hesitate to also develop incivility towards each other like that. So therefore, we'd have to have this rule and that rule and these things like that. So most people, what they know as the Republic, and Socrates' social philosophy, starts at that point. You know, one Western historian said, it is the best kept secret in Western philosophy that Socrates' original city was vegetarian. Yeah, but we never heard this before. No? Socrates was preaching vegetarian culture. So these first two are very nice for that. You know? And now, so I would recommend memorizing for Bhakti Shastri 1 and 2, and also 15. 15 and 16. Let's chant 15 and 16. I get some. Need more copies here. Of course, you know this by memory, right?
Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam bukham tatvam pushana parvenu satyam dharmaya drishtaye pushane karshi yamasurya prajapatya vyurasmin samuha tejo yate rupam kalyana tamam tate pashami yosavasa purusho sosamasmi.
There's basically 2 meters in here. And this, I think, is actually not poetry, it's prose, like that. Okay, Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukam tatvam pushana parenu satyam dharmaya drishyate. What is Hiranya? Yeah, mayena? Effulgence. Hiranmayena patrena, covering. Hindi, cover for a letter is patra. Satyasya pihitam mukam. What is mukam? Yeah, again, the Sanskrit is just so easy, so difficult to avoid. So please remove this effulgence, which is covering your face. Show your real form to your devotee and protect me. So there's the word pushan in the third line. Tatvam pushan. You know Pushtimarg in Gujarat? Yeah, they're Vaishnavas. They're very similar to us. Balabhacharya left Lord Chaitanya and joined the Balabha Sampradaya, and became the leader and started his own group called Pushti Marg. Marg means pathway. And Pushti means to nourish, like that. And it's the same thing as like bhakti, you know, following rules and regulations of bhakti yoga to nourish these feelings, Raghunuga bhakti, so called Pushti Marg. So it's the same thing. So, you know, somebody who's nourishing you has to be, again, like a person. And it goes on the same thing in mantra 17, 16. Pushane karshiyama surya prajapatya. Again, show your form to your devotee like that. The final 17 and 18. So here he's directly, these are prayers to somebody. These two are directly prayers to somebody. They're not prayers to the controlling principle. Oh, impersonal controlling principle. You know. Yeah. Like that. So this is very. So the conclusion is personal. So therefore, Prabhupada's translation is Om. As the Supreme Lord in the beginning is justified, because you know the conclusion like that. You know? It's like somebody, if I said, oh, the President of the United States is coming to Brussels today. You say, oh, Obama's coming here? What do you say Obama for? The President of the United States. It's like, that's what it means. So what does Om mean? It has three parts. An Aum.
Living entity. What is living entity?
Yeah. Radha and Krishna. Yeah, Radha, Krishna, and Jiva. I don't know how it fits in there. I remember one time you have to open everything up as much as you can. You know, you find you even close your lips, right? So it's a nasal one, comes like boom, comes out of the nose in the end like that. So it's from the most basic to the most everything is in there. You know? From the beginning to the end, like that. Very, very rational. So it's the impersonal address to Krishna, my Lord. Let's chant the last 2 mantras.
Vayur anilam amritam atedam bhashmantam sharilam om kato smara kritam smara krato smara pritam smara agneya sukhataraye asmin vishvani deva vayunane darvan yuryo vyasman juhurane do buhishtate namam uktim vileima.
And he's telling him, please remember all my sacrifices and lead me on the right path to you. And Prabhupada says, even if we can't remember Krishna at the time of death, Krishna will remember what we did for him. You know, there's this famous story, probably you've heard this. One man dies and he goes to heaven and God's there welcoming him and glad you're here. And he looks back and he sees his life back there. It's like footprints, you know, across the sand, and by the beach, through the dusty deserts, and different footprints like that. You know? And there's always a second set of footprints with him when God was going with him and all these things. But the man is looking, oh, that's when that happened, that's when happened. Well, that was my divorce. Oh, wow. Well, that's when my son died in the war. Oh, wow. And he sees that these most difficult times, there's only one set of footprints. You know? So he's feeling a little depressed, right? He says, well God, you know, you were with me the whole time. But when things got really bad, it's like you abandoned me. You know? So God's laughing. He said, no, there's only one set of footprints because that's when I had to carry you. Like that. Oh, yeah. So this kind of feelings. Krishna's a person, he reciprocates with us. Yeah. He's very helpful. He's praying. Even though we forget, he's asking that, even though I may forget everything. Let this body be burned to ashes, bhasma. Everything's finished, nothing left. You know. But don't forget my sacrifices, my accumulated karma. Right? And my karma has been for you. Right? And therefore, please remember that and remove all obstacles so I can go to you. Okay. So very personal. Huh?
I see, that's a nice one.
No, the whole thing is very nice, you know.
Yeah, but that's special.
Yeah. So I'm kind of putting it into modern language and stuff like that as like an essay with the same ideas, the same like, you know, mental games to attract people, show you that I also know mental games. One time Prabhupada was explaining the first verse, Koitabha Dharma, that's the first verse or second verse in the Bhagavatam. Dharma Koitabha Projito. Yeah, it's the second verse, right? So Prabhupada is explaining Koitabha Dharma. He says, it means cheating. He says, for example, you come into some town, you're visiting there to do some business, so some man says, hey, come here. Well, what is it? He said, I found these stock certificates with this gold, you know, these gold coins. This man over there, he's a real rascal guy. He dropped his gold bag here. And I'll tell you what, I'll give you half of it or so. You give me half the value and just take it. Because I can't change it, because people will suspect like that what happened. But if you take it, you'll be okay like that. And the guy says, okay, yeah, gives you half the value of the gold, you go off. You try and change it, it's all counterfeit. You know, it's a very common con game. So Prabhupada says, this is Koitabha. And Prabhupada says, see, I know something. It's con game. It's very common, called con game in English like that. You know? So this is people, this is to, the author is showing how you can play little games with words and still he accepts Krishna as a person like that. You know? And many times people accept authorities like that. They see if this person is so intelligent, he accepts it. I directly, Professor, one friend of ours is a professor at the University of Calcutta. He's in he was head of the Department of Ancient Indian History and Culture. And he was studying Sanskrit from 5 years old. So he was specifically, he was, because in Bengal, many intellectual people think that the Lord Chaitanya's movement is for low-class people. They say tikiwalas, guys with little hair like that, you know, and they think, because there are so many deviations, and always strange philosophies, and strange emotional things, and also very disgusting, degraded sexual activities, you know. And so, had a very bad reputation amongst the intellectual people in Bengal, and they're very, very proud, you know. Maybe think they're the greatest intellectuals in all of India. Okay. In some ways, it's true. So then he was associated with us somehow or other, got a little more involved. You know. Actually, I met him on the bus. I was reading something in Sanskrit, and he said, "Oh, you read Sanskrit?" So a little bit, you know. He said, "I also like Sanskrit." So we sat down, we're talking, you know. Then he introduced himself, being a professor, and we gradually got him involved in our science congress. You know. And then I heard him say, and then I gave him Prabodhananda Saraswati's Vrindavan Dhamma Himamrita, like that. So Prabodhananda Saraswati and his brother were like, I guess the chief priests for Ranganath. They come from a high class family, probably, But very difficult to kind of find a more high class Brahmin, like that uncorrupted tradition, like that. You know, vegetarian for at least 40 generations. We don't know more than that, but it's almost certain forever, you know, like that. So the Sanskrit, and he was reading the Sanskrit and Prabodhananda Saraswati's poems glorifying Vrindavan Dham, and he was going, wow, this is, yeah, I can't follow it. It's really, it's incredible. And then I heard him telling to one friend of his on the phone, a professor, he said, you know, so these ISKCON people are quite amazing, you know. I used to think the Srimad Bhagavatam was a kind of like a low class modern literature in Vedic perspective for unintelligent people. But then I began to realize that it wasn't that the Sanskrit in Srimad Bhagavatam was low class, it was my Sanskrit was low class. I began to look at it again, I began to appreciate it. Just, you know, this is so profound, you know, like that. You know? So same with people, some people, different people need different kinds of, you know, ways to approach them. You know? One reporter in South America, he does like specific topics, you know, focuses on different areas. So he was on a big talk show, maybe 40,000 people listening. He was talking about his contact with the Hare Krishnas. You know? So somebody said, oh, Jose, you've been, you know, investigating the Hare Krishnas. How are they? He said, well, their philosophy is a little rare, a little unusual, their philosophy like that. But their food is really good. So, it's right away, is everybody else, okay, you know. What's their philosophy? It's kind of like, their food's good, okay. It's, you know, they gotta, you know, they can't be too far out. You know? So many ways to become, you know, to teach people to accept you. If you travel with an accordion, I've had an accordion for some time, yeah? And you could carry on the airplane, it was amazing. So many people would just walk up and say, you play the accordion? And it doesn't matter like how you're dressed, you have a clown outfit on with a red nose on, you know, or if you have fangs or horns coming out. If you've got an accordion, nothing else matters, because obviously you're weird, you know. If you've got an accordion, obviously you're some kind of strange guy, and it's to start with, you know. But after that, it's okay, you know, it's okay. It's, you know, but you're playing accordion, so you can't be totally, you know, got some taste of music and that stuff. So many ways to meet people. And because of our natures, we're going to be talking to different kinds of people. You know? Generally speaking, we encourage ladies to preach to ladies and men to preach to men, like that. You see some brahmachari talking to three beautiful young girls for 35, 40 minutes in the temple alone. Let one of the Matajis talk to them. Like, oh, but they're appreciating my knowledge so much. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like that. You know. Yeah, so, you know, very natural. You have your nature, your male or female, intellectual or hardworking guy, or your kshatriya. You may not be very intellectual, but you're brave. How many people here are brave? Okay, I am brave. No, Prabhupada said when the war comes, the brahmanas can hide under the beds like that. The brahmanas can look outside like that, you know. But same time, too, when it comes to an intellectual argument, you know, the brahmanas, they have their intellectual judo and all their clubs and sticks and stuff like that, which, you know, the kshatriyas, you can't do that. They don't know how to handle themselves in a situation like this. I was quoting Clint Eastwood earlier, the cowboy guy, Clint Eastwood. One movie he says, I don't talk much, but when I talk, my pistol talks for me. So that's, you know, okay. He's talking to some. He's surrounded by about 45 Indians with bows and arrows, and he starts talking to them like that, and they go, okay, right. Go man, peace treaty here. Okay. Yeah. So different people have different, you know, ways of recognizing the truth. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, men, women, children. Yeah. Yeah. So this is it's a good tool. The more you learn it, the more you begin to appreciate how it's like really useful and stuff like that. You know, where it's from, what the origin is, how it fits into the Vedas. You know, like that. So it's part of our Bhakti Shastri program. Right now, our what's it called? By extension, we're doing internet Bhakti Shastri type thing, telephone calls. So we're on mantras 7
through 11.
We're going back and forth with these of the Upadeshamrita. Because 7 and 8, 6 and 7 match up with 7 and 8. Construction. It's also interesting too in terms of the first few verses, your quota. In the nectar instruction, that's text number 2, Atihara Prayasascha Prajalpa. And Prabhupada's talking about over collecting, and he quotes mantra number 1, and paraphrases the implication there. And it's amazing because I think this, the translation for this, I think, was even written in India. Papa started to translate this as part of the his magazine, Bhaktivedanta magazine, like that. So it was serialized like that. You know. But then the Nectar of Instruction was written much later, like that. But Prabhupada's explanation of things is almost identical. Look at the two, it's like, wow, it's the same ideas again, like that. You know? It's not like something new. It's just he's presenting what is the explanation that he heard from Bhaktisiddhanta, like that. You know? And the more you study Prabhupada's books, you see this. You see, wow, you're dealing with somebody who's vastly more intelligent than we are. You know? You begin to see like symmetries and the way Prabhupada explains things. You know, the symmetries and the arguments again. This is, wow, this is very intelligent, very, very highly intellectual. This philosophy is a highly intellectual entity like that. Prabhupada says that the Bhagavad Gita is the intellectual incarnation of Krishna. The intellectual incarnation. He can become a stone, he can become a sound, or he can become an idea, a concept. Yeah? So the Bhagavad Gita is the intellectual incarnation of Krishna as intelligence. Yeah. And it expands like that. And of course, Prabhupada has his intelligence. You know, and we can, you know, we have to develop our own intelligence, but by taking the position of our guru, our specific guru, has certain mood, humor like that, and perspective. You know. Prabhupada was preaching in the 20th century, into the 20th century. Bhaktisiddhanta's purports to the Nectar of Instruction, he talks more about achihara. Achihara means acquiring too many mystical powers. Okay? Don't acquire too many mystical powers. Alright? Okay. So, in the modern world, it's not a problem. People don't do this. But when Bhaktisiddhanta was preaching, it was a real fact. People could sit in samadhi for like 3 hours, you know, barely even breathing like that. Just reduce the respiration down to the point where they just, every 3 minutes they're taking a breath like that. So, that was, so what? it wasn't like everybody, but it was common. And after that, people could tell the future, the past, they could see your future like that. This morning, you were eating fruit in bed. Yeah. So, the purports, and we find so much symmetry in Prabhupada's purports. And like that. Any questions? Comments? What's that mark on your forehead? What's that mark on your forehead? Are we gonna have vegetarian food? Yeah, okay.
Nobody know who wrote
it? Madhvacharya says Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu. Yeah. And every day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus who take charge of different parts like that. Just like on a ship going across the ocean, they're like, what is it? There's four or five? Four officers of the watch. And they're each in charge for 6 hours, like that. Actually 8 hours, but it overlaps 1 hour on each end like that. And they're both there. And there's a captain, but he's not in charge the whole time like that. So the Manus are people who are in charge of the function of the universe, divided up into 14. Each day of Brahma is divided in 14 parts. With every change of Manu, there's a change of all the demigods, the god of the wind, Indra, Vayu, they all change. All the great sages, they change. Like that. So Swayambhuva Manu is the first Manu in this day of Brahma. And so many things came from him because he had to generate these things, ethics, morality. Like, Om Purnam, it's complete. He tells us this, it's complete. But again, most economic theory is based upon the fact that it's not complete. So we're offering a fundamental shift in economic theory like that.
Somewhere it went wrong.
Well, it's right in text numbers 9, 9, 10, 11.
Yeah.
That's avidya, cultivation of avidya. Because they want to become God.
They have less than 2 hours of service a day.
Huh?
These manus, they have less than 2 hours of service a day.
Less than.
If there are 14 in a day, they are taking shifts, wash out.
12 hours, yeah.
Yeah. See, if there are 14 in one day, they have less than 2 hours a day.
Well, no, it's because when Brahma is sleeping, there's no manus.
How's that?
When Brahma is sleeping, there's no manus. So 12 hours.
12 hours.
Yeah, so that's the 1 hour.
Less than 1 hour.
So that's 1 hour of Brahma.
Oh, I have a funny story.
One hour of Brahma. And also the overlap, I think, too, again, same thing. So that they have, you know, continuity of management. So, but then it's probably that's why there's 14. Yeah. 12 and two more hours. Maybe 2 hours. Yeah, each one. So, but that's, you know, again, that's, you know, for 12 hours of Brahma, right? Yeah. But for them, it's like inconceivable. Yeah.
But what about this dividing, I have a funny story. I know a new family and they're very proud of Krishna. They have a building, they have an altar, and the whole house is decorated with Krishna and everything. But they are Hindu and they're seven family members. It's a father, mother, and five children. But they don't follow the Vedic, they're Hindu. So every day one of them is vegetarian. On Monday the father is vegetarian. On Tuesday the mother, then the older son. And so they divide the 7 days of the week among each other. They know they have to be vegetarian, but they do every day of the week the one is vegetarian. So they made it like simple. They also do divide.
There is something.
In I remember now hearing this that in Croatia we have once in a year it's a Christian tradition something and they call it fasting some days it's a big and it's a big deal. I mean, and on that day you are not supposed to eat meat and it's a big issue what to do on that day.
So, when I was a child in the United States, we didn't have meat every day. I'd like macaroni, things like that. Eating meat every day, every meal, was just even in my lifetime, it became. Because the meat is subsidized. I guess maybe the same in Europe, but in America, there's heavy, a lot of your taxation money goes to. Because their idea is that our citizens have become aggressive, they conquered the world because they eat meat. Probably says ultimately that's the basic principle. It's not taste, it's not nutrition, it's not economy, it's envy. Unless you have this envious, selfish attitude towards other creatures, you won't be aggressive like that. And that's what people want to promote. So, because even Lent is 40 days of fasting. It starts about right before, is it before Easter or after Easter?
Before.
Yeah, before. So Mardi Gras, a big festival in New Orleans, United States, Mardi Gras. So in French that means? Mardi Gras, Mardi, Monday, Fat Tuesday.
Fat Tuesday.
Yeah, because the day before they started, the day before it started, everybody would eat like a pig, you know, because they're going to be fasting for 40 days. You know. So the idea is you're supposed to, you know, do some kind of fast, and then, of course, St. Francis did it very intensely and stuff like that. Did it for 39 days, you know. Because Jesus fasted for 40 days or 40 nights. So, I remember as children, we were doing it still as children, we had to take some vow, you know. But for example, like it wasn't the season for watermelon, so we'd want to take a vow of fasting from watermelon. So even then, and actually Orthodox Christians, and Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, one devotee, his father is a big professor, Orthodox guy, and he was saying that, for example, during those 40 days, a religious Greek Orthodox household, every hosta, doesn't take wine, oil, or meat, like that. Then there's a certain number of days during Christmas they don't do it. It's all together, it's about 3 months out of the year that religious hosta and Orthodox tradition is following the four principles they abstain from sexual relations, like that. It's like, and then he said for priests, I think priests can eat some meat, but a monk, no, it's just. No, Orthodox monk does not eat meat. Because of kindness to the animals, no. Because of eating meat, it's impossible to be celibate. That's the conclusion. Any monk who eating meat cannot be maintaining his vows of celibacy. So you go into it, all these traditions, you start finding all these things. Whether it was like Halloween, what that word means? All Hallows evening. All Hallows. Hallow means holy. Yeah. Because the next day is All Saints Day. And then you worship all the different saints and all the ancestors, like the forefathers. So the evening before that has some kind of like, they had like little cadavers and skeletons and stuff, but they were like, you know, worshiping them and giving them, you know, penda and stuff like that. So now it's just this degraded Day of the Devil. Day of the Devil type thing. Yeah, but before it was all holy as evening. Yeah. So a lot of us, what we're, this is to show people what we're talking about is traditional. You know, not introducing anything really different than what your tradition. We're trying to get you to go back to your real traditional culture. And many times people appreciate that. Yeah, you have to revive the old ways. So the boys came into a pueblo, little town, you know, village in an Indian reservation in the southwest United States. There's some tribal guys and put there by the government years ago and had their land. And they came in, devotees came in all shaved up with Bhagavad Gita's and these things like that. And all the people were dancing up and down and singing and all calling each other and, oh wow, you know, I'm so happy, you know, these guys are here. I said, why is everybody so enthusiastic, this and that? I said, oh, because about maybe 40 years ago, 30 years ago, one of our big mystic guys, he's dead now, but he had so many mystical visions. He said, in the future, you will see bald men coming from the east preaching the old ways. And when you see them, when this happens, you have to understand that the dominance of the white people is coming to its end. So here we were, bald guys coming from the west preaching the old ways. And it's like, you know, oh. You know, these white guys, they don't go back to their own country. You go home, white man. Yeah, what do you mean, we white men? Stop it. Okay, so Papa, he's...